I'm Frank Vaughn. It is February 17th, 2025. It is ridiculously early in the morning. I'm filming this before the news cycle even begins, so hopefully it doesn't bring anything crazy. If it does, you'll just have to wait to hear from me. Facts are, I didn't want to leave you in the lurch. You people are dedicated. I keep seeing all the hard work you're doing, sharing and supporting and all the various things that you do, and I appreciate you. Today, I want to focus on what statehood might actually look like if it comes down to that, and then we're going to get to a few user comments. And yes, you heard me right. I said users. When you watch my videos, I hope you find them useful. When you comment or participate in any way, you become a user. I don't like the word commenter. It's awkward, and it's a personal pet peeve of mine. I don't like the number six either. So you guys are users from here on out. Naming convention out of the way. This is a map of Canada. I've talked about how Canada is systemically corrupt. I've talked about how crime is our number two export industry. Could be number one. I don't know. Our biggest industry is government by far. I've talked about how Canadians are disenfranchised. You have no power. You have no say. The judiciary is rigged against you. You have a Senate that's appointed for life. And how that government has ruled Canada with an iron fist for the benefit of the few at the expense of you, the many. How they have allowed the communist Chinese to send their army troops over here for training. How they've allowed them to operate police stations and to target Hong Kong expatriates and Falun Gong. How they've opened Chinese government warehouses for their Belt and Road Initiative, which is a BRICS junket, which is attempting to usurp the place of the free and democratic West. That's Canada for you. I don't need to go over it. You can watch my videos. Now, I want to talk about statehood. I said that no matter what happens, Canada has to reconsider the entire idea of the Federation, because the Federation has been broken from the very start. And if you don't like that, please go back and watch my work. I've shown you how it's broken. I've given you history lessons that many people, both detractors and those who support me, didn't know before. I build the story out for you so you can see it. So we either have to renegotiate this Federation, we either have to split it apart into a minimum of two countries, or there is the other solution that is on the table, which is Donald Trump's annexation offer. If we don't get our house in order, there is absolutely nothing we can do to stop the Americans from doing what they say they will do. Because not me, not your fellow Canadians, the government in Ottawa, the government of the system that has broke this nation, has left you defenseless and sold you out and put you in a position where you are entirely dependent on someone else for your survival. That's who your anger should be focused on. It shouldn't be at the American National Anthem, which you're booing for no reason whatsoever. It's an empty virtue signal. Booing is all we can do because we can't do anything real. So if statehood falls upon us, Donald Trump so far has only talked about one big 51st state. But I want to tell my American audience and the Canadian audience that I don't think if you are serious about statehood, there's a more stable option, and there's a lot of options on the table, and we're going to discuss them all. But if you actually want what I think is a fair solution in the face of statehood, if it's an inevitability, Canada's actually four states. And the reason it needs to be four states is you need to win the peace. After Trump is gone, after his government is gone, after there are elections, after the Democrats get back into office, after things change again in 10 or 15 years, you'll need to win the peace. And the way you win the peace is four states. And I'll tell you right off the hop, there are Americans who are going to think four states, that's a lot of power to share. That's eight Senate seats in a chamber of 100 seats. However, Canada's population, running at about 40 million, is in excess of 10% of the U.S. population. So it's actually less by population than we would get otherwise if we were just a typical state. But there's several nations wrapped up in Canada. First, there's Quebec. They have their own language. They have their own culture. They haven't even signed our current constitution or our Articles of Confederation. They participate in the project of Canada voluntarily. The country, the western part of the country, which This whole territory here, which we'll get to next, comprises one of the states that I'm talking about, is robbed for the benefit of Quebec and to a lesser extent the East in general. These are rich places, but they take the money from here and they bring it over here. Quebec would need to be its own state in the best equitable solution so that they could self-govern, because that's what they've been doing the entire time. That's why they're only voluntarily participating in the country. They do things for themselves. If they are part of Big Canada, there will be a secessionist movement forever. So Quebec. There's also Ontario. These two provinces combine for most of our population. There is an argument that you could have Ontario and Quebec together, but they would be fighting for the rest of their lives. They've been fighting since the very beginning, but they do cooperate to screw over the rest of the country. But I digress. Ontario is a province of at least 15 million souls. I don't actually know what the present number is. It's a lot. And most of the population lives in this band right down here. This is largely unpopulated, but it is very resource rich. Ontario has a distinct culture as well. And then you have the Maritimes, which is New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia, and Newfoundland. They have a very distinct culture. And they really shouldn't be divided up or lumped in with Quebec. I would argue that they should be their own state. And all of Western Canada together should be a state. Four states. And yes, it's eight Senate seats, but it doesn't cost any more in Congress. It doesn't cost any more in the Electoral College. If we are to get full statehood, these are the considerations. And under this division of things, the peace might actually get won with the minimum of civil unrest, particularly when it comes to Quebec and the Maritimes. Now, there's other ways to look at it. You could divide the country into two and have two states, lumping Ontario, Quebec, and the Maritimes into one big state. Now, it comes with the problems I've already said, but I guess it would be less Senate seats. So that's an option too. Another option to consider would be offering certain territory or offering certain provinces territory status, offering them the ability to become Puerto Ricos. The advantage, you miss out on the benefits of statehood, which is elected representation, and on paper, that's pretty heavy. But on the flip side, no federal taxes, no capital gains tax. You get the protection of the Constitution, but you also get exempted from a lot of the requirements. And you do have self-government as long as it's consistent with the U.S. Constitution. So there is another option on the table. The Maritimes could become territories. Think of Puerto Rico of the North. There's a lot of different ways it could work. 51st state would create a state with a population, I believe, in excess of California. If it's not in excess, it's roughly equal. It is a huge territory with very distinct cultural flavors. Now, here's the beauty that I see in the United States, something that's been preserved. If you're as a foreigner, as somebody who hasn't lived under the U.S. Constitution, it's a beautiful thing to me how each state has its own flavor, has its own culture, and has its own laws. They're sovereign. They're called the United States because each state is sovereign. Utah doesn't look like California. New York doesn't look like Texas. Florida doesn't look like Montana. Every place preserves some of its cultural individuality as an independent state with its own government, its own laws, its own law enforcement. It's actually a really beautiful thing. The Republic is literally the best we've ever done in the world. Canadians should wake up to that fact. The Westminster system that we're living under now has delivered terrible results, but it itself is a terrible political system, very backwards. You, as Canadians, are basically serfs. You just get to mark an X on a ballot, which I suppose makes us feel good every so often. Now, thinking about the spirit of statehood, thinking about that individuality, Canada has very distinct flavors. Ontario is very cosmopolitan. It's known as the center of the known universe. Some would say it's arrogant and all about itself. Some would say it's a little bit isolated from the world, has its own way of seeing things. Quebec is very French. They have language laws. They have their own culture. They are a very unique culture in North America. There's nothing else like them. And they are very smart. I've always said in all of my criticisms of Quebec that they are the only province that has done Confederation right. They have taken full advantage of all the levers of power. They have configured it to their advantage while not formally participating, and we have bent over backwards to keep them involved. They are very smart people, and they are cultural nationalists, and you can argue about the rest of their politics, but that is one thing for sure. Quebec is a culture, a very distinct culture. Thus, my proposal that they become a state. The Maritimes, again, a very distinct culture. Now, there might be Newfoundlanders everywhere across our country and, as a matter of fact, everywhere in the world, and they're very recognizable. But it's the same for the entire Maritimes. They constitute a distinct society. They constitute a state identity. Now, Western Canada is where it gets a little tricky, but not for you Americans. It gets tricky for those in Western Canada because everybody has their own map on how it should be drawn. But in this particular instance, if statehood was forced upon us, we're not going to be in a position to make all of our individual demands. There are some people who insist that we have every single territory and province be turned into their own individual states. And that might look good on paper. But I don't think the Americans are going to want to give us that much of their Senate. Consider, the whole reason that this is on the table in the first place is because Canada has become overrun with corruption and crime and money laundering, because we have not become resilient, because we haven't built pipelines, because we haven't expanded our ports, because we haven't diversified our trade. For all the talk of diversity, our bread is buttered in the United States. The Americans are only getting involved because Canada hasn't done a very good job of maintaining its sovereignty. The elites that run this country have run it into the ground, and the United States knows. So this peace conversation, this conversation around annexation, there is an element of they're doing it to us rather than us asking for it. It would be better if we asked for it, if it came down to it. But you might want to have answers, practical answers, looked at from their point of view to get an equitable solution. Some would say Vancouver doesn't belong in Western Canada. I disagree. I think that Western Canada's political makeup, including Vancouver, including all of BC and all the Northern Territories, is a balanced polity, especially if we sort out the mass immigration problem and sort out some of these managerial problems that mainly come from Ottawa, get rid of equalization and unleash our energy and our wealth. It's balanced or it tilts conservative. I would argue it tilts conservative. BC should have a conservative government right now. There's all kinds of shenanigans. They're in court playing it out. It looks like the NDP stole their government. Americans can understand that. You went through 2020. You can understand that. These peoples all together are a distinct society. This is a separate country. At a bare minimum, Canada is two countries, Western Canada and Eastern Canada, at a bare minimum. And you can lump it all together, but it's going to create more headaches for you long term as Americans than the solutions that I'm offering. And this is only if statehood happens. I'm honestly more afraid of the status quo continuing. And I'm sorry this isn't a highly edited piece, but I'm afraid we make a deal, we keep Canada going, we clean up the streets, but our people are never liberated. We still have a king. And our politicians and our media are complaining that the king has been silent and he's not intervening on our behalf. We're appealing to a king. After all this time and all this talk of independence, having another nation foisted on us and superseding the nation that existed before without a single vote, we still haven't mastered our own dominion. We still have a king. And we complain about our allies being silent, but what have we done? What have we done for anybody? We spread corruption around the world. We export 83% of Australia's methamphetamine to them so that we can kill their people and make money for cartels and triads. That's another big threat here in Canada, is the triads. The Americans know. They know we're a clearinghouse for Hamas. They know we're a clearinghouse for Hezbollah. The whole point of this video is that we start preparing options that make sense to them and that preserve for us a good measure of power. A four-state solution is the best solution. A two-state solution is a little, it's not as good. A single-state solution, it's going to be tough to manage down the road. So in light of time constraints, we'll let that serve as an introduction to this conversation, because it's a conversation that we need to have so that we are prepared. Let's move on to user comments. The Peace Ark at the border south of Vancouver says, children of a common mother. This is from Fastmid. Isn't that the truth? We descend from the same. Why are we hating on our brother nation for simply calling us out? It's like a brother calling out another brother and saying, you're drug addicted. You're into crime. I want you to clean up. I want you to come home, and I'm willing to help. That's basically the American message. You're taking advantage of me. You've been borrowing money off me. You haven't been fair to me, and I want change. They're a brother nation, so much so that that's what it says over the Peace Ark. This says, I live in a U.S. dollar country. In October 2024, I exchanged at 74.5 cents Canadian. Today, I exchanged for 67 cents Canadian. In 4 months, that's a 12% reduction in the value of a Canadian dollar. This is the poor management of your country. This is the poor management by your government. They're inflating your savings away. And this is just the beginning. If they touch off the trade war that I talked about in yesterday's video, if they touch that off, the Canadian dollar is going to tank. It's lower than it is here. And it's fluctuating by pennies, and we're coming up to the end of that 30-day window. And when we get there, you're going to see some movement in the market. These guys are destroying your purchasing power. A 12% reduction in 4 months is insane. Wokebusters Canada says, it's fixable, talking about Canada. Some things are easy, some not. All it takes is political will. And I say, why hang on? There is no political will. Pierre has said no to opening the Constitution. Quebec has said no to pipelines. Electoral reform is dead and buried under those. What are you hanging on to? All of the core structural problems that plague Canada right now require big vision. We don't have any big vision in politics. We don't have any visionary leaders. And I know there's going to be somebody in the comment, inevitably, that's going to say, Bernier, he's not popular. No one likes him. And he doesn't have big vision either. He doesn't want to open the Constitution. I talked to him about the necessity of that in 2019 when I sat at his table and ate meals with him, and when I opened his conferences, and when I helped him found the party. I was there at the very beginning, and I left because it was clear he didn't want to keep his word. And he wasn't serious about big change. There's no political will in Canada to do the right things. So instead of looking to the federal government, we have to look to the provinces to threaten to break the thing up. If not to America, to go our own way. Western Canada, to go our own way. For Quebec, this notion that Quebec might have another referendum is, ooh, it's a big fear. They're already a separate country. They're just participating in federation. They're not actually part of it. They can leave anytime they want. The referendums are farces. They're meant to hold us over a barrel, to extract more out of us. Like I said, Quebec is the only province doing confederation right, taking advantage of it, full advantage of it, every step of the way. They're already sovereign. So there's no will. We have to do it a different way. Our politicians, the ones that are vying for victory in the next election, or the one that will be installed and there won't be any elections, Mark Carney, they're not interested in any of this stuff. I'm not going to read my tweet. I'm going to read the response. Well, Canada is two nations, Western Canada and Eastern Canada. That's what I said. But Mary, and this goes to my point for making this video. Mary says, no, it's not. There's Western Canada, Ontario, Quebec, and then the Maritimes. Do not lump them in. Look at all those exclamation marks and all the excitement. There are millions of Marys in Canada. You're going to have to deal with all of them. If you want statehood, if the Americans are genuine about it, you're going to have to mollify the Marys. That's why I talk about four states. It's literally the best solution that could lead to lasting peace and unity in North America. Selena Macadanza says, personally, as a Canadian, I cannot stand my own anthem anymore because Traitor Trudeau has changed the anthem. I love the Star-Spangled Banner. Now, look, I love the Star-Spangled Banner. I love what it symbolizes. I love the way it sounds. I also happen to like the Russian national anthem. It has a dark history. They have new words to it, but the song is so powerful. The Canadian national anthem, it's always been kind of lukewarm in my mind as a song. But the fact is, I took a lot of pride in it for a long time, and then along came Justin Trudeau, and he ruined what this flag symbolized. For those of us who were bought into the myth, those of us who were wise enough to wake up when they trampled this flag in the snow on Parliament Hill, when they destroyed the convoy, when they locked us down and kept us from our loved ones, when they forced us to participate in a medical experiment just to survive, when they forced people out of their homes, when they left you on waiting lists to die, they did all those things under this flag. Those aren't exaggerations. They're things that actually happened. But on top of that, they had to make the anthem more gender neutral. And so instead of honoring the sons of this nation who died in the millions, they had to change it so it was gender neutral language, more inclusive to everybody. And now the song, for a lot of people, is ruined. If you listen very carefully, it's kind of funny. Because the Canadian people, though they boo the American national anthem and shame themselves every time they do, when they sing the Canadian national anthem in the same arena, they sing it with the old words. So the Canadian people aren't completely asleep. They're just not aware of what their country has become. Next up, Darlene Voigt says, yes, I'd like you to notice that they always get a raise. In BC, Ebby withdrew the $1,000 grocery rebate but gave his cabinet members a raise. Yeah, the people always pay. The cuts always affect the people. But as I've said all along, they never miss a paycheck or a meal. When they talk about a trade war with the United States, they're talking about you. They're talking about you suffering in a trade war. They're going to be ensconced with their culinary professionals and their catering services in Ottawa, surrounded by guns and security to immunize them from the effects of their decisions. They will never see a pay cut. They will never spend a day on the street. They will never lose their homes. But they're more than happy to sacrifice yours, and that's what they're talking about. It's their policy that will cause Canadians the pain when they decide to retaliate against Trump. It will hurt us. So when they try to blame Trump, keep that in mind. It's actually them that are visiting us the pain. Fringe Minority says, have you bought any American dairy products lately? How about beef, eggs, poultry? We control our supply chains greedily while flooding theirs. It's true. We export to the United States, but we have tariffs so high, and they accept it, to protect our farming industry. Now, you could argue that's necessary, and I'm fine with that. You can make that argument. There's arguments against it, too. I've made some of them. But the fact is, because we're a cold nation, we're frozen half the year, because we don't have the proximity advantages to warmer climates that the United States, northern states have, we have a system of tariffs in place to protect our farming industry, to make sure that we are self-sufficient in food as a nation, and to protect. We like cartels, too, let's be honest. Some of this is about maintaining cartelism in many of our industries. The Americans just do this for us. This is part of that whole $200 million favor that Trump keeps talking about and our media denies, but it's real. U.S. capital subsidizes us to motor on this way. They subsidize our high taxation. They subsidize our inefficiency because they are not allowed to compete, and they agree to not compete. Trump is saying, look, if you guys are going to be the way that you are, if you're going to be a corrupt narco state and everything else, first off, you got to get your house in order. And second of all, I want to compete. Basically, I want to crush your businesses. Why are we doing this? Why are we protecting your auto industry? Why are we protecting your farm industry? We do that for a state, is what he said. We do that for a state. We don't do that for another country. There's wisdom there if you have the ears to hear. Bob Ray is in here just because he's such a fool. I don't like to call people names, but this guy is, I would love an hour, 2 hours on stage with the cameras rolling live with Bob Ray. I would have the time of my life with this man. And it's hard to explain unless you know who he is. He ruined a province. Somehow he transformed into a federal politician in the Liberal Party. And he goes out there and talks on the media as though he should have any kind of respectability. He is the most failed politician in Canada. Power without justice is tyranny. Blaise Pascal, he sounds so wise. They have power. They don't give us justice. and they are tyrants right now promoting Mark Carney for a position and never having faced an election. He will become the de facto leader of this country. He will use emergencies acts. He said it himself, to suspend the charter on every single issue facing Canada, implementing a communist dictatorship. And this moron, and that's what Bob is, says power without justice is tyranny. I actually believe he doesn't know what he is. I think he's sincere. I think he believes in his own virtue. And that's another thing I don't like about him. Robert Watson says, as an immigrant to Alberta, thank you for your history lesson. Now I better understand Alberta and Central Canada's poor relationship with the East. I noticed it when I started a business in Calgary. I got such poor service from the East. I started buying my raw materials from the United States, and they were more than happy to deal with me and treated me as an equal. In Western Canada, the United States has always been a better friend than the government of Eastern Canada. If you don't like it, that's tough, because they butter our bread. 50% of Saskatchewan's trade goes to the United States. I'm not even going to tell you about Alberta or anywhere else. They're our friends. They are not our enemies. We are so foolish when we boo their national anthem. Just offensive, considering our relationship. Stephanie Hyans says, I'm 57 years old and talk daily with middle-aged women in Toronto who are colleagues or neighbors. They are union members, watch legacy media, and are on Facebook or Insta, and therefore think they are informed. Since university, they've been trained not to read conservative publications because conservatives are rich and evil for not wanting to share their income. No, I'm kidding. Of course, I was one of them. No, I'm not kidding. Of course, I was one of them. Consequently, I didn't know Thomas Sowell existed until I was 45 years old. All of my middle-aged female acquaintances remain trapped in this ideological gulag. I feel like a secret agent working behind enemy lines every day. You are seeing a large part of what Ontario actually is. It's a very public sector union mindset. It's a very propagandized mindset. No one in this country believes the BS coming out of Ottawa more than Ontarians. And I'm not, look, there's millions of you who get it. I'm not trying to say there isn't, but you're outnumbered. That's all I'm trying to say. The majority of Ontarians are bought into the propaganda hook, line, and sinker. I've never seen in Western Canada the things I've seen in the East. There are TVs everywhere programming people. When they lifted the mask mandates, the vast majority of people kept wandering around like zombies. I had to get out of there as quick as I possibly could. I'm glad I got out of there. And quite honestly, if you feel the same as me, you should be thinking about relocating too. The West needs good souls. Shelley Wood says, kicked us out of government and military jobs for refusing the jab, killed our elderly and sick by venting them for C-19, put C-19 patients in homes with vulnerable citizens, and they died in mass numbers, allowed immigrants to flood our country, and paid them to be here. We took money from Canadian taxpayers and we funded people who have never paid into the system. We bring people here who are disabled, family members, extended family members, the elderly. They get dumped into our system for primary care and they've never paid into that system. We are overrun and we have been overrun, and it's been a partnership of all parties in Ottawa who all agree that mass immigration was a solution. They've only changed just recently. Justin Trudeau was the first. Not the Conservative Party. Justin Trudeau was the first. He started letting visas get canceled, and he lowered the immigration numbers, and he started talking about the fraud in the immigration system. And then, after he did so, Pierre started calling him out on some things and then released his own numbers, which are still not low enough. Canada has a huge problem. We're overrun with temporary foreign workers. Our people can't get jobs because there's programs subsidizing foreigners who then take their paychecks and send them overseas. We get nothing. We subsidize it. Why are we doing this? I don't know. And all the rest is true as well. There were so many avoidable deaths as a result of C-19 policy. It's a tragedy, and I've probably talked about that enough for today. And then we have Gurganat Tsarneva. Hopefully I got that right. I probably didn't. Gurganat Tsarneva? That's probably what it is. As someone who came to Canada 35 years ago from a country from the former Eastern Bloc, hearing the Marxist hymn sang in Canada in a university is so surreal, so scary, so appalling. She's talking about the Internationale. I showed it in a video, a week or two ago. Go look. It's part of the thumbnail. These kids must have never lived in a society where you must sing it for many occasions, where you must do and say many things you don't want to, but you must. The thing should be uprooted in Canada as soon as possible before it's too late. I went to a rally on Parliament Hill, a protest. When was it? 2018, 2019, 2020, somewhere back there. I went up there. And there were all these anti-fascists everywhere. Antifa was there. And I was wearing my suit. My cameraman, Brad, I love you, man. I miss you. He was wearing a suit. And we walked into these radicals dressed like fools. And we started asking questions about why they're there and what their purpose was. And we exposed them for just being angry, angsty teenagers, basically, with no real purpose in life, completely godless. But among them, to my surprise, was this woman named Olga and her husband, Eastern Europeans as well. And there they stood, these, I would have to put them in their 60s. I want to put them in their 50s, but I'm going to put them in their 60s because I always underestimate everybody's age. It seems like the good people, the spirited people, always look younger than they are. But I digress. They're in the middle of this, and they're doing the same work we were, except they were doing it a lot louder. They're trying to tell these kids with all their communist paraphernalia, with their hammer and sickle, with their celebrations of Mao and Marx and Stalin and Lenin, how terrible it actually was because they lived the experience and they escaped. And I talked to Olga, and as I filmed her, she broke down and cried. Maybe I should re-release that documentary. It was pretty powerful at the time, and it's still relevant today. Maybe I should re-release it. I thought I was going to get killed that day. I really thought when I turned my back, someone was going to put a knife in me, and I was thankful that I got out of there in one piece and that my equipment wasn't destroyed. Like, it was such a dicey situation being among these radical, venomous, foaming at the mouth, angry people. But we should listen to the people who lived it. And I know that's a bit of a long one, but this one was mainly for the user who always gets to the end of the videos. I'm Frank Vaughn. I appreciate you all very much. I know you've been evangelizing out there. You've been talking to people in the chats, on the lives. You've been sharing the videos, and you've been trying to get the message out. And I appreciate all of you. I appreciate all of you immensely. Without you, I'm nothing. So please, keep pushing forward. Keep pushing the message. Keep working. And for those who have donated, I thank you very much as well. And if you want to participate in that way, you can via the website. But as always, it's all here for free. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link and one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.